precept of all the worlds,
similarly behaved
like a conventional householder,
in the palaces of his other queens,
performing
the religious duties
of a family man. Hare Krishna. So we have come to the last text in this particular chapter, and the chapter is entitled Krishna teases Rukmini. So before I go on further, I would like to say a few things about what this whole chapter is about. Somebody may be new here. So this particular chapter, Krishna is actually teasing Rukmini. And he's saying that, you know, our marriage is a mismatch, you know, I'm a useless guy, you know, I ran away when Jarasandha came and attacked me, and, you know, I'm a cowherd, I own nothing, and, you know, I've got no morals, I sleep with so many women, you know, he keeps on insulting himself, and he says that, how is he? He's a mismatch. Now, to understand this pastime, actually, it'd be good if you're from the Indian background, because in the Indian background, what happens is, marriages are arranged, they are not fixed, it is not an individual choice, but it's arranged. So before arrangement, you know, that the bride will have a lot of grooms, proposals they call it, there will be about 5-6 proposals, oh, this guy is a doctor, and this guy is an engineer, but his ear is crooked, and this guy is he's got no work, but his father has got wealth, you know, for 10 generations, and, you know, like this, different matches will come. Similarly, the girls too. This one is very highly educated, but she's very dark in color, but don't worry, dark is beautiful, Krishna is beautiful, and, you know, like this and like that, they'll say all kinds of things. So, and there'll be match brokers and all. So, to understand this pastime, of course, anybody can understand the pastime, but if you have an Indian body, and if you are coming from a social position, then you'll understand this pastime. So, what's happening is Rukmini is trying to say that, Krishna is trying to say that he is not a good match for Rukmini. But he's saying, but Rukmini, what happens to her, she actually starts crying. You know, how can the Lord say about this? And she cries, and then she's overcome with fear, and there is pain, and finally she even faints. And then, of course, Krishna picks her up and consoles her and says, look, you know, I'm just teasing you. And then Rukmini says, actually, nobody is equal to you. The Trimurti is Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. You're even beyond all these people, you know, like that she praises. And everything that Krishna said about himself, which is considered to be a self-insult, like I've got no morals, I ran away from Jarasandha, all that. And Rukmini says that how all this actually a glorification, if you really understand. You know, the Lord himself becomes a cowherd boy to satisfy or to win us all over. So, and finally, Krishna actually says, you are certainly most beloved of all. He says that. And this is what in modern term we call a lover's spat, a lover's quarrel. Only thing is, in the modern terms, this lover's spat can become very tricky, can even end up in divorces. You know, small little thing. And in fact, there are a lot of books written about this. You know, they know that this modern marriages are going into trouble. So they have books citing all the reasons why a husband and wife will fight. So those of you who are going to get married soon, better know all this. What are the reasons we are going to fight? By identifying the problems, these are the reasons why you fight, and then by knowing it, and then you're well prepared. Then when the problem, I know, I read in the book, so this is why we're going to fight, let's stop the fight, you know, something like that. So according to the list, Now, let me give you a graphic story, you know, about what happens, how a love spat takes place in the modern world. Like John and Jane, they've decided to go for a movie. And they're ready to go, both are dressed and about to go, and then the phone rings. When the phone rings and John takes the phone, oh, Jane, it's for you, your mother. So Jane takes on the phone. And then the chat starts, blah, 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 it goes on. So John is angry. And John looks at his watch, he's doing sign like, time to go. But Jane is still on the phone. And then what actually happens is, Jane's mother, she has a problem. The father has got some, you know, suddenly felt dizzy and, you know, is refusing to go to the doctors. And Jane said, no, you must go and see the doctor. And no, he's refusing to eat, he's refusing to get up. And, you know, she's got a problem. And Jane feels, my mother is expecting me to do something for her at this juncture. And I can't just leave her like that and run away. But then John is very angry. That, you know, we already fixed. And this is your silly mother anyway. And this kind of things go on all the time, so time to get out. So what happened that night, to make the story short? There was no cinema that night. There was only cinema in the house. They were fighting and fighting and fighting. And with a little spat like that, many a times people get divorced. Now, they have listed what are the most common reasons people fight. Casual flirtation is one of the most important reasons. Either the women or the men casually flirt with others. Especially in the modern terms, you know, when the wife also is going to work, and so women are also going to work. Those days women were at home, men were working. So men and men, you know, those days there were no gays, so there was no flirting then. But the point is, nowadays it's dangerous too. The point is, now women are also, they're gone out, and especially when the women hear that the husband is flirting, and says, okay, women's rights, liberation, man. He wants to do it, I'll also do it. Anyway, casual flirtation is considered one of the most topmost reasons why people, you know, there is any the spark to start up a fight. Then the other things they've written is friends. The wife's friends are not supposed to be, you know, the husband doesn't like the wife's friends. And the wife definitely doesn't like the husband's friends. I know it because I've got personal experience on that. They hate your friends. Women hate your friends. And so, somehow, you know why? Suddenly this world is being shared by somebody else. I only married you, I didn't marry your friends. You know, that's it. That's the whole concept. So friends, of course it works out very nicely. The third most important is in-laws. Believe me, this is very true. In-laws, you know, somehow or other everything is beautiful in the beginning, but it can be hell in the end. And then of course they talk about money. Of course money, you know, she wants more money for her cosmetics and he wants more money for his booze, and all the time they're fighting, you know, money for which one. And also the other things mentioned is, even you'll be shocked, this is the reason why I want to bring that. One of the most common reasons they fight is because of the remote control. I want to watch Oprah. No, I want to watch wrestling or something like that. And they fight over it. Who's to watch what? And finally it is. So, this is, in the Western world, they're very smart. So, you get married, you fight, and you divorce. So what do? You have to be married to be divorced, right? Don't get married. Live together. And then don't divorce. Just walk away. So they have made this very nice adjustment called, it's known here as partnership. I didn't know when I first came, it's all a shock for me. Believe me, it's a real culture shock. He's my partner, she's my partner, and, you know. And a woman is seated there, and the patient is a woman, and he goes and says, and she says, she's my partner. I almost fainted. I never heard of this before. Now the point is, what I'm saying is, this is again, in the name of women's liberation, what they have done is, it's all very smartly done. Woman is still exploited. Exploited, but it's a very nice manner, so much so that the woman herself does not know she's being exploited. Now, the Vedic, of course, the Vedic civilization is, or the Vedic culture is something that, you know, that we all, that's what we are trying to do, establish the Vedic culture. So definitely in the Vedic culture, a divorce is a no-no. There is no such thing as divorce in a Vedic wedding. And so sometimes even our Matajis are fighting for rights, you know, they want, you know, so many things they're trying to introduce and, you know, like, Brahmacharini, Sannyasini, all these terms do not exist in the Vedic dictionary. And even like that, so many things they're introducing, trying to introduce. The other day, I was browsing the net and I saw one Swami Saraswati, a lady Swami. Now, that was mind-boggling. I was wondering, a lady Swami? I've never heard of that before. And she looks pretty young. She may be having maybe one or two husbands, I'm not very sure. But the point is, the word Swami and the whole, the definition of the whole thing is at stake. So maybe we should recommend to, you know, the leaders or whatever that, you know, when we take initiation, you know, we talk about no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. Maybe we should introduce no divorce. You know? Maybe that will be a good idea to stop this thing.
No.
Say no divorce when I get married. So anyway, now the reason I'm just highlighting all this is today's thing, and what are we going to do, or what is the reason, I have a reason for bringing all this. That is, Krishna is actually, in this pastime, he's actually telling us, you know, like, such things are very common amongst householders, and these things should be tolerated. And in fact, even says that this kind of spats, they are the highest form of entertainment for the householders. He even goes to say that. Now, the most important reason why Krishna is doing all that is, as you all know, Krishna is all attractive and he wants to attract everybody. Now, he also needs to attract the common folks, which is women and sudras. Now, sudras, as you all know, Kanda Purana or Skanda Purana, it is mentioned that Kalau Sudra Sambhava, which means everybody in this material world is a sudra, in this present world. So everybody is a sudra. And so, which means that these pastimes are meant for every one of us. The idea is to understand how the position of the householders and to overcome difficulties in their marriages and stay as husband and wife till death do apart. Now, he also says when he's speaking to Rukmini, he says, women who are corrupt, with corrupt desires, cannot worship me faithfully. He says that, he warns. People with corrupt desires cannot worship me perfectly. So then, how are we to remove these corrupt desires? These corrupt desires are removed by when you read these pastimes. And then what happens is, they develop this loving attitude towards Krishna, and by performing devotional service, they can actually get out of this ruckus. Now, that's why in the Brahma Samhita it says Ilai Tena Bhuvanani Tyajasram. He says Jaya Tyajasram. He says Krishna says Ilai Tena. I perform lila pastimes Bhuvanani in this earth, so that we who are so attracted to Maya will be attracted to his lila and then come to him. Otherwise, we all, you know, we all have our own plans. So that's the reason he performs this lila. Now, some scholastics or scholars, they don't like this kind of lila, especially like in South India. If you go, there's a lot of plays or dramas about this Bama, Rukmini and Krishna. And some of them can be, you know, like ridiculing Krishna so much and be wondering what is going on here. Even in Padma Purana and Vishnu Purana, the story about, like, I've told you the story earlier, how Shatibama becomes very possessive about Krishna. And then she trades him to Narada, becomes a slave, and Narada is taking him around like a monkey, with a noose around his neck and making him jump around and all that. So this will become very offensive. You'll think, you know, why Krishna is doing it. Now, but this pastimes is pretty difficult to understand, but some of these pastimes are true. I'll give you reasons or evidences to say how these things are true. Now, what is happening is scholars reject such proposals that how can the Supreme Lord, how can the Supreme God behave so, like, you know, in a stupid manner? That's because most of us are stupid. Because we are stupid, we can't understand. So he's performing these pastimes and little by little he's winning us over. Now, and that is the reason why they not only reject the person, because some of the scholars, the scholastics, they will come to the conclusion, you have a body, then you have wife, then you have children, one wife, one problem, 16,108 problems. Now when I say wife a problem, you must understand, because I'm speaking, I'm saying wife is a problem. But Matajis must think husband is a problem. I'm fine with that. Marriage, material life is a problem. So for the men when they speak, they say wife is a problem. When the women speak, husband is a problem. And there is no problem with that. Anyway, so they come to this conclusion, because you have a body, that's why all the problem. No body, no problem. No marriage, no divorce. So they say God is impersonal. And so that is okay, because God also has an impersonal feature. He's got three features. So there is an impersonal feature also, Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. So they only hold on to the Brahman feature, which is not bad, because still he's God. But then what happens the next time? They reject the Puranas, because they say, oh, this Puranas has got no value, this is a waste of time, it's simply hocus pocus. So they reject the Puranas, and that becomes a problem, because once you reject the Puranas, it's very difficult to understand the philosophy. They say, the ancient people world, tribal people, isn't that? Indians, you know, when the Indologists went to India, they thought, oh, these idiots. I mean, what's wrong with them? I've said so many things about, I mean, so many times I've quoted so many verses about this. But look at this verse, even, this is Sanskrit written so many thousands of years ago, of course, we believe in all this. It has got beautiful prose, there is chandas, there is grammar, there is nirupti, everything. It has got everything, which even modern languages don't have. How can those tribal people those days have such a beautiful language? And which can attract so many millions of people all over the world. Why does it transcend even in, you know, barriers like race and religion and country? So, what I'm trying to say is, even the Puranas are so difficult to understand. And how are you going to understand the Brahma Sutras? Sutras, they're just short aphorisms with a lot of meaning. And how are you going to understand that? And then we go back, Upanishads. Upanishad just talk about Brahman, that's all. Brahman and Atman. And if you're going to understand Brahman, you have to understand, if you understand the Puranas, and then when you read the Upanishad, every time you see Brahman, and then you put this Krishna, then you'll understand the Upanishad better. Otherwise, without this, if you read Upanishad by yourself, you'll only, you know, you'll be only scratching all over, you'll never understand what you're talking about. You can never understand. And that is about Upanishads. If you go to the Vedas, it's even worse. You know, just impossible. You just don't understand what's going on. So, the Puranas are very important. Now, a little bit about the Puranas. There are 18 Puranas. And each of the 18 Puranas has 18 Upapuranas. The Upapuranas are what is known as supplementary histories. Purana means history. The Srimad Bhagavatam is a Purana, Bhagavata Purana. Like that, there are 18. 6 in the mode of goodness, 6 in the mode of passion, 6 in the mode of ignorance. Now, of each of the Puranas, there is 18 Upapuranas. Now, next to that, this is interesting, each Upapurana has got what is known as a Upakhyana. Each one of them has got 18 Upakhyana. Now, I have reason to bring all this in. Now, there's 18 Upakhyanas. So, what are the Upakhyanas? These stories where some saint has got some interest in. You know, when you read some Puranas and then some interest is got, say, on some particular person, then what he does is he actually sits down to write more about it. But when he sits down to write more about it, what happens is he gets revelations. He gets revelations, and the pastime sometimes unfolds. Even in the Vaishnava tradition, many a times we have seen Acharya is talking about how they are there in Vrindavan and they and Krishna, you know, even Prabhupada, so many times have, these things don't appear, but many a times Prabhupada has said that, you know, that, you know, like I said the last time, one day he was smiling and then the devotee says, why are you smiling? He said, I was wrestling with Krishna and Balaram. And who won? He said, I won. And he laughed. He was chuckling that he won. The rest like that. What I'm saying is, special people have these special revelations and they put down these stories. Now, each one of the Upakhyana, that particular story, that is expanded to the Itihasa, so epics. The epics of Mahabharata and Ramayana actually come from Upakhyana. That's the way it is. Now, this is just for us to understand how these things work. Now, I'll give you an example. You know, you all know the story of Tirupati. There is Venkatachalapati. And so there is, many people will be wondering, we are reading Bhagavatam, but we don't hear about it. We never see that particular form of Vishnu. Why is this, you know, face is covered with such a huge tilak? And, you know, so on and so forth. And lots of questions we have. They talk about Padmavati and Srinivas. And so what's happening? In fact, one of these is, I should tell you that story. But the point is, that is known as the Padma Upakhyana. That comes under the Vishnu Purana, Papurana, Upakhyana, and then it's there. But most importantly, what we have to understand here is Nigama Kalpaturu Kalitam Palam, which means the Srimad Bhagavatam is the mature fruit of the desired tree of the Vedic literature. If there is a tree of Vedic literature, and this is many fruits, but the most mature fruit is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's why Srimad Bhagavatam is given to us, and that's why we accept the Bhagavatam as the most important scripture. Now, for some philosophy. Who is Rukmini? We have to find out who is she. We have heard so many things about her in the last couple of weeks. Now, Rukmini, she is one of the three Lakshmis, the main Lakshmis. Of course, there are millions of Lakshmis in the Brahma Samhita. It is mentioned Brahma's things. There are millions and millions of Lakshmis. So there is Sri Devi and there is Bho Devi and there is Neela Devi in the Vaikuntha Loka, and also you find in the milk ocean there are Vishnus. We all know that the three Vishnus. There is Mahavishnu, and there is Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and then there is Sirudakshaya Vishnu. So Sirudakshaya Vishnu, he stays in the milk ocean. There is a Svetadvip. There is a white planet. That's right, white island, Svetadvip. And he is residing in that white island. Now what happens is, he has got three devis with him. Vishnu is always accompanied by the three Lakshmis. Now Sri Devi, she is that Lakshmi in the sense she is Aishwarya. She is wealth, represents wealth. Now she holds the feet. You will find the three Lakshmis, one is holding the feet. That is Sri Devi. Then Bhu Devi, she is representing earth. Now she'll be holding the Lord's head on a lap. Rather, though it's a serpent that Vishnu is lying, their head will be resting on Bhudevi's lap. And then Neela Devi, you'll find that in this particular form, the serpent has got 3.5 coils. The serpent, Sheshnaga, has got 3.5 coils, and the half coil is coming in front. At the end of this half coil, Neela Devi is seated there. Now the interesting part about Neela Devi is when the Lord incarnates, you know, depending who will come with her, it depends on the Lord's desires. Sometimes Bhu Devi, Sri Devi, sometimes all of them come. Sometimes they even have fight, like in the Padma Upakhyana, there is even a fight between Neela Devi and Bhu Devi and all that, and Sri Devi. But these all again the past times. Now the point I'm trying to say is Neela Devi, as far as Neela Devi is concerned, she usually comes to this material world. She comes as a pure devotee of the Lord. She takes birth, becomes a pure devotee of the Lord. She prays very hard because she wants to marry the Lord. And ultimately, the Lord comes and marries her, and then she goes back to the spiritual world. So Neela Devi has got this special potency of, this special pastime. If you, those of you know the story, the pastime of the Arvas are 12, 12 in number. There are 12 Arvas. Now the Arvas are something like the Goswamis in our parampara. Just like we have the 6 Goswamis, they have the 12 Arvas. The Anvasa, they are known as, you know, Ayudhas, Bhushanas and Parshadas. Ayudhas meaning weapons, Bhushanas meaning decorations, and Parshada means associates. So the Lord, Vishnu's associates, whether it's Garuda, his sword, or his, you know, whatever, and they have taken birth, or they have appeared, and taken birth, they have appeared in the material world, and they are known as Arvas, and they, Arvas, they glorify the Lord. And they are, there are 4,000 important verses sung by these Arvas, and they are known as Pasurams, and they are also known as Divya Prabandha, or Divine Glorification of the Supreme Lord. Now, similarly, we find that in Vaikuntha, just as in Vaikuntha, that you get these Lakshmis, there is also Goloka Vrindavan. Now, that's why I'm trying to say all this, like, what has Rukmini got to do with this? Now, Rukmini is actually Sri Devi, and in the Goloka pastimes, like in Vrindavan pastimes, she is Radharani. So, Sri Devi is Radharani, and Bhudevi is Lalita, and Neela Devi is Vishakha in the Vrindavan pastimes. Now, who's who, this comparison about who's who in Golok and in Vrindavan and etc. Is given by Jiva Goswami, has written a book on that, and also in Gopal Champu, you'll get some references about who's who. This is pretty exciting. Also, there is a drama written by Rupa Goswami. This is, drama is known as, some of you know this, Lalita Madhava and Vidakta Madhava. In Vidakta Madhava, he talks about the who's who in Vrindavan pastimes. And in Lalita Madhava, it's who's who in Dwaraka. Which Lakshmi is which person? Like Rukma, who's Rukmani, who's Satyabhama, and who's, you know, the rest. And so that is the thing. Now, there are many interesting features, many interesting stories about Rukmani. Most importantly, there is, of course, the main story for that will be about this particular interesting story about Rukmini, which is a far-off story, and I don't think so, most of you probably would not have heard of that. That's why I wanted to speak about Rukmini. Now, the thing is, you find that in the south, always when Krishna is depicted as Krishna, you know, because in Krishna, then always you'll find Bama Rukmini together. That is a mode of worship everywhere. Even ISKCON Chennai, the deities are Bama Rukmini with Krishna. And in Sri Lanka too, in Colombo, the deities are Krishna and Satyabhama and Rukmini. So, what I'm trying to say is, in the south somehow or other, when they have this Krishna and Satyabhama Rukmini as very, very important deities. But we also have some Rukmini temples all over the world. You know, I remember in Los Angeles, in ISKCON too, in Los Angeles, the Dwarakadish Rukmini Temple in Los Angeles. It's a beautiful temple, and that struck me when I first went there. I was shocked that, oh, we have a Dwarakadish and Rukmini Temple as well, you know? And that is fantastic. Anyway, I like to, no, that's a joke, I don't know how to say it. Anyway, so the point is, there are also Rukmini temples all over India. You know, that is the most important temple in Dwaraka itself, Dwarakadish temple, of course the deity of Rukmini is there. And there is a Rukmini temple, which I'm going to tell you about. Now, in Pandharpur, there is a Rukmini temple as well. And also, there is another temple in Kundanpur. My first time I'm reading that. And this Kundanpur is also a Rukmini temple, and that's where the actual site of abduction took place, where Krishna takes Rukmini and, you know, and elopes with her, runs away with her. So that actual site, there is a temple. It's not very prominent, but the deity of Rukmini and worship is going on every day. Now, talking about Dwaraka, as you all know, Dwaraka was created by Krishna because he wanted to create Dwaraka. He wanted to have his ultimate pastimes there. He had his first 25 years in Vrindavan and Mathura, and the last 100 years was spent in Dwaraka. So he instructed Vishwakarma. People say that he ran away and, you know, the Ranachor and all that. But actually he instructed Vishwakarma to create this island, of Dwaraka, surrounded by waters all over. And Vishwakarma actually built this whole place. Now, when he built it, there was one particular palace which had the tallest dome, and that was covered with gold. And that particular, so which is the most prominent dome or most prominent palace in Dwaraka. And that was the residence of Rukmini. So Rukmini was very important in amongst all the queens. Now, when you visit Dwaraka, if you do, of course, a beautiful place and all that, and there is what is known as Bet Dwaraka. Bet Dwaraka is the island of Dwaraka. So you have to take a boat, it's about 20 minutes ride, and then you can go, and here the whole island is full of temples and, you know, residences, and they'll tell you, this is where Satyabhama stayed, this is where Rukmini stayed, this is where this happened, you know, they go on with all the stories, and, you know, sometimes, you know, this is where Sudama gave the chip rice, and so it's, the whole place is like that. But in actual effect, these temples are not the real original temples, though that's what they claim. Because the curse is, when the Vrishni race, at the end of his pastime, the whole of Dwaraka was just absorbed, gone. Vishwakarma took it back, Krishna took it back with him, and Vishwakarma did the job of taking it back. So what has happened is, subsequently, they're building temples, the kings are building. It is said that Lord Krishna's grandson Pradyumna was the first to put up the state, oh, this is where my grandfather had passed times and he started building the temples. So they've been submerging and submerging and submerging. Every time they build some, you know, the big palaces and temples and cities, the cities have been going on. They discovered one city lately and they said there are 5 more cities there. So whatever we are saying, the present Dwaraka, the present Bet Dwaraka, everything is all subsequent arrangement and is nothing, it is historical, but it's not the real Dwaraka. We have to understand. Now, what is the most important thing that attracted me so much, I'm waiting to speak about, is this one. There is a Rukmini temple about 13 kilometers from the Dwaraka, this temple. And so, I saw a painting on the wall and I was shocked. I've never seen a painting like this in my life. I thought. Now, that was shocking to me. I mean, the deity of Rukmini is there. It's a beautiful place. But I still wondered why. You know, I can't accept it. Now, this is about a chariot. Now, whenever we talk about Krishna and chariot, what comes to our mind is Parthasarathi. Krishna is there. Arjuna is there. And, you know, the Bhagavad Gita discourse. So, everybody knows about it. Chariot means that's the first thing that comes to our mind. Then I told you my first shock when I went to Navadvip and all that. And I saw that in all our Gaudiya Vaishnava thing, there was a chariot, but there is no Arjuna there. Arjuna was not important. I was shocked. I thought Arjuna was the most important for Krishna. He was not there. The gopis were there. So that was the root shock to me. Oh, the gopis are more important, in our line at least, Gaudiya. I mean, they are devotees, but I'm saying. So this is the chariot where Krishna and Balaram there, Nakrura and riding, I've told you this. And all the gopis are stopping Krishna from going to Mathura. Stay back in Vrindavan. And I was told about, you know, Sambhoga and Vipralamba. You know, the happiness in, bhakti in the mood of separation. And the mood of separation is even get better than in the mood of union and stuff like that. So that was the second thing. Now here is also a chariot. So you'll see, so what is so fantastic about a chariot? A sage is driving this chariot. He's riding the chariot. So what is so fantastic? What is so shocking? Instead of horses, there are no horses. So big deal. Maybe there are cows, something else. No, there were two people there. On one side it was Krishna. And on the other side it was Rukmini. They are running with the chariot. And this sage, he's got a big whip. And he's whipping them. You know? And when I first saw that, I said, this is speculation. I said, this is speculation. I was telling people, this is not true. How can somebody simply, you know, whip Krishna like this? It's not possible. It is, I mean, there's no way possible. You know, this is just speculation, I thought. Much later, of course, I had to do some research, and it's there. This whole story is there in Mahabharata, and why this happened. So, it goes back to the story of Durvasa. That sage who's whipping them is Durvasa. Now, Durvasa, as you all know about Durvasa. There are many stories and we have read before. In the first instance, Durvasa is the one who gave the benediction to Kunti Devi. You know, he was so happy with the way she served. He said, okay, you chant this mantra and look at anybody, you will get a child out of them. So she tested that, looked at the son and she sang the mantra and she got Karna. So the whole call will say Karna, but you know, Karna. Anyway, that way, that's how she got Yudhishthira, she got Bhima and Arjuna. And then she gave this mantra to Madri, and because Madri used it, she got Nakula and Sahadeva. So all the five Pandavas came into existence by the benediction given by Durvasa. So Durvasa is so important. Then Duryodhana wanted to disturb trouble when the Pandavas were in the forest, told Durvasa, you go and visit them. They are there, go and visit them. Because Durvasa will have a huge army of people. So Duryodhana thought that the whole army of people, he goes there. In the forest, what can they do? And you know, Durvasa is known for his temper. He's a very, very quick-tempered person. And so when Durvasa will curse, he'll go there, and then he'll find that Yudhishthira can't serve him properly, so he will curse, and you know, that was the second instance where Durvasa. Anyway, Draupadi had the Akshaya Patra, and she could satisfy everybody, and then they got benediction as well. And then the story of Ambarish Maharaj and Durvasa, and is being chased by this chakra of the Lord, that also we know. Now, always what happens is Durvasa, always the story may be a bit, in the beginning, may be a bit difficult, it may be unreasonable, but the end is always very sweet. They always end up with great, benediction. Actually, Durvasa is a partial expansion of Lord Shiva. The anger portion of Lord Shiva has come. If you look at the birth of Durvasa, there are three different versions of his birth. But all of them, basically, it's the anger of Lord Shiva that comes out and he separates it. And that partial expansion is Durvasa. Parvati herself has complained, I can't live with you because of your temper. Talking about householders' life, their problem was, or Parvati's problem was, oh, your temper. I mean, many husbands here will probably experience this, you know, the wives complaining about their tempers. Now, the point is, Durvasa, being a partial expansion of Shiva, he also had a lot of powers. And so, what happens is, like I said, he stirs trouble in the beginning and gives benedictions at the end. So, he comes to visit Krishna and Rukmini in Dwaraka. So, of course, Krishna knows, you see, this is Durvasa, and he knows, okay, I'm in trouble, I have to be careful. Tells Rukmini, hey, you better be careful, guy is here. No matter what he does, just smile, don't say anything. So Durvasa came there, of course, almost 2 days he was behaved very nicely. Said, yeah, Prashadam said, he kept asking him, how are you? Is everything alright? Maharaj, are you taking care of the food? Oh, everything is perfect. Then he'll go, he'll take a look. Oh, this vase is so beautiful, isn't it? Such a beautiful vase. Oops! And crash. So he was going on destroying things. He was going around the house, he was destroying things. He was just testing, let's see what happens. And I would, oh Maharaj, don't you worry Maharaj, this is nothing, no worries, we can get plenty, don't worry. So it went on like that. So Durvasa was thinking, what the hell, I'm trying to do something here but nothing is happening. So he was trying for some time, he couldn't stir trouble. Then one day he said, okay, I want to, so anything else Maharaj, can we do anything for you? Yeah, I think I need a big feast tomorrow. I want a big, real grand feast. He said, alright, we'll make you this grand feast. So, and he said, I want this special rice pudding, called payasam. So I want this special rice pudding. I want it, this is something that I'm longing for. So Rukmini said, yeah, no worries, we'll make the best rice pudding. And everything was done. So dinner time is coming, that's supposed to be the dinner. Dinner time is coming and they're waiting and waiting and there's, Durvasa is not arriving yet. So Rukmini took a glass of water like this. and she drank. At that time, Durvasa walks in and he says that she's drinking this water. And then he gets angry. Oh, you invite me for dinner and then you are happily drinking away. You can't even wait for a, you know, Aditi Devo Baha, you know, the guest is as good as God and, you know, he quotes everything. I'm here and you can't even wait for me and you've finished everything and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It goes on for a long time. He was so angry. And then he said, I'm going to punish you. And he says, first thing he does is he tells her, go to the chariot there, and he says, yoke yourself onto the chariot. And Krishna is bewildered and tells him, you too. So he puts both of them. And then they are running, and Durvasa is on the seat, and is whipping them. And they were smiling and running. You know, that's the story goes that they know still, you know, don't say anything. This is Durvasa. Smile and smile and smile, and they're running like that. And then, of course, after a certain distance, Durvasa stops. And then he says, oh, I'm very pleased with you. I'm just testing you. And like I said, then he gives benedictions. Before that, yeah, I'm sorry, I missed out the most important, the rice pudding. That's the most important part of the story. Before that, because he's so angry, he says, now he says, smear this pudding on you, all over your body. You know, instead of eating it, he says, smear on your body. That's it. Imagine somebody gives you some food and says, put on your body, don't eat. So Krishna had to smear this whole fire all over his body. And he missed his souls all over except the souls. And then only this running with the chariot. And what happened was, he said, all the parts of your body that has been covered by this rice pudding, fire, you'll be protected. Nobody can, you know, injure you. This all is protection. I'm giving you that protection. And then tells Rukmini that of all the queens of Krishna, you'll be known as the principal or the most important queen. So he gives her that benediction. And also it is said that because the soles of the feet were not covered with the rice pudding, and at the time of when Krishna was winding up and going back, and the hunter could shoot at the, that's why he shot the heel, and that way he could wind up the pastime of Krishna. But that is, everything is actually happening by the will of Krishna, and he allows certain things to happen so that his greatness can even pull. So, that was a very, very interesting story. So when you go to Dwaraka, and if you go to this Rukmini temple, so then you don't have to get frightened like me. Oh yeah, 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 this we know, you know, all this is true in Mahabharata. Okay, with that, I'd like to stop here. If there is any questions or comments. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.